Welcome to the Rennie Podcast, where we talk about the real estate market and the people connected by it. Our goal is to empower you to make informed decisions and provide context for the real estate world around you. We hope that with every episode, you will become a little more knowledgeable and a lot more curious.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the final episode of the Rennie Podcast for 2024. I'm Ryan Berlin, head economist and VP intelligence at Rennie. And of course, I'm joined by Ryan Wise, our market intelligence manager and lead analyst.
Hello, how you doing?
Good, good. We are pumped. We're genuinely pumped to have our friend and a guy who is a ton of fun to talk to, Rob Palm, join us. Rob, welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Very exciting.
Rob is a very successful realtor. He's been working as one for 25 years. Is that all within the Sea to Sky corridor? Or?
Yeah, mostly in Whistler.
Yeah, mostly Whistler. Yeah. And Rob, you joined us in 2023, so we're lucky to have you. And you achieved Rennie leader status last year as well as one of our top realtors.
Correct. Yeah. And I think I'm there this year too, hopefully, if we're there.
Sure you are.
Yeah. You've probably already got it.
Yeah. Nice to be a leader.
And it's a family affair here at Rennie because your son, Drew, worked with us on the Intel team for, I think it was 3 months this summer. And he was a rock star.
He's pretty good. I might be a little biased, but I think he's a pretty good kid.
It's okay. We saw it. You weren't there to influence us. So
yeah. Did he feed you all the extra data?
Oh yeah. I got a little extra work on it. That was pretty cool. Yeah. He's like, hey Drew, can you look at this for me?
Yeah. Anyway, we miss him. I don't know if we'll see him again here at Rennie. We'll see.
I'm sure he'll come by when he's back for sure. Yeah.
Okay, let's get on with the show here. So we experienced a surge of activity in housing markets across the province in October. In Metro Vancouver, there was a 40% increase in sales between just September and October, which was 5 times more than is typical for that time of year. Of course, 1 month does not a trend make. So my question for you, Mr. Wise, is how did things look in this market in November?
So November looked a lot like October, more so than the rest of the year, let's say. So I would say that the market has shifted a little bit. Sales did fall last month, so around 3,250 kind of thing, which is a 16% decline. It's a little bit more than the typical seasonal pattern. And sales on average between October and November fall about 10%, so a little bit more, but October still resembled November more than the other months. So sales were way up year over year. It's about a third higher than last year and the year before, but still kind of 14% below average. And I think that's sort of the market that we've shifted into now, is one that's much busier than the same month last year, but still kind of below average. And that's sort of where we are. And I think that's probably a reasonable expectation for the next few months. December and January are typically slower months, so we can expect some declining sales, but overall a lot more than December of last year, I think, is a reasonable expectation for where we're going.
So it's interesting because, yeah, at this time of year, sales are slowing. People just aren't as engaged in the real estate market, either as buyers or sellers, as the year winds down. So sales sort of month to month now, we expect to slow, but as you said, they're higher than they were over the past couple of years, still below the long run average, but up a little bit. So it's hard to know how to actually feel about this.
There's another way we can kind of look at it, which is typically October is the busiest month of the second half of the year. Mm-hmm. And then September and November are about the same. So the average September is the same as the average November. This November sales were 18% higher than this September. So September was still that sort of older, slower market, and November has more in common with October.
So then interest rates have to be a big driver to this.
Yeah, I think it's in a couple of ways too. We talked about it a bit last month, but it's both an increased purchasing power thing, but also consumer confidence. We've seen enough rate cuts, we've seen enough declining rates that buyers feel a little bit more confident that it's time to make a move. What do you think about that, Rob?
Yeah, I think the same. It's funny when you look at the data, and you know, when I look back at summertime was not very engaging in our market. I don't know whether as much in Lower Mainland, but definitely in Sea to Sky, there wasn't a lot of people.
Same down here for sure.
And the difference between a fall and a summer here was definitely something of a change. And I'd say it's confidence. And it's also, we suffer in Sea to Sky from a lack of inventory. We have for the last probably 8 years. We saw a little bit more inventory jump, and there was some choices all of a sudden. And when you get a little bit of an interest rate kind of change on that, I think people started engaging more, right?
You know, I do think, yeah, because we know that the interest rate changes, whether you're looking at the Bank of Canada's overnight rate or prime, or you're looking at fixed rates, like they've moved in the right direction, but it's not they haven't done so to the extent that it would really, where you would understand that like people will come flooding back in on that basis. Again, it's not the purchasing power increase per se as it relates to rates. It's confidence. But I wonder if some of that confidence also comes from like the stock markets the last like year have just been off the charts. So people's wealth, like they weren't in real estate and they were waiting to get in, they've done very well. Right. I mean, your portfolio might have gone up between like 25% and 45% this year.
That's a good point. If you held in stocks, you did well. But if you had a GIC the last few years, you did well there too, with rates previously being higher. There was a lot of ways for your savings to earn money while you waited for that right time to jump back in.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, you know, and I wonder how much demographics plays into that as well. There's some people that are probably saying, hey, let's take some profits out. Let's figure out where we want to go. Is it better to get into real estate? You know, when you see that market at top, I don't want to say topping out, but you know, listen, let's enjoy that 45% and maybe take a little bit out and see where we can get into some more traditional investments.
Yeah. And you said, so Rob, you said before we started recording today that the Whistler market's been pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty, I mean, it's been even, right? Would I like it to be a little better? For sure, no doubt.
What's better?
Yeah, I mean, I think on a transaction basis, you know, I think Whistler's done a little bit, it's been even and flat from the years, really from 2022 to today. You know, the number of transactions has been about the same. The level of investment's gone down. And I would say the time on market is a little longer. So, you know, it's just a, overall, it's a bit of a slower market, which is fine when you're as a buyer, you have a chance to be able to shop a little bit. When you start talking about, you know, being an agent who has listings, you know, you have to make sure you're managing expectations a little more. So that's where I'm at with that. And one of the things that's happened, especially in Whistler, not as much in Squamish, but Whistler tends to be sticky in pricing when it's coming down. And so there's a lot of people that have been sitting on the sidelines saying, oh, we're going to wait for that price to kind of come down. And it hasn't. And so trying to get people, buyers, to engage with how come the prices haven't come down as much as I expect? Here's the thing. You know, we have an inventory problem in Whistler and Sea to Sky, really. And so you're not going to have a whole lot of extra choices. And so what we've seen is that, oh, I understand where you're coming, but it takes a while for people to really come along to that, if that makes any sense.
And have you seen a sort of the macroeconomic conditions change and maybe some confidence comes back to the market? Have you seen a shift in the preferences that buyers have within the Whistler market? Like, are they starting to really hone in on certain home types? And is that different from how it was? Like, is there any kind of evolving dynamic there?
And I would just add to that question, because there are some different home types in Whistler than in other submarkets in this area.
Whistler's very segmented, right? And the beauty, I mean, listen, it's a lifestyle investment. It's a lifestyle purchase for the most part when you start talking about our market and really Sea to Sky as well. I would say Squamish is more tied to the Vancouver market and Whistler's got its own little sort of nuances.
Yeah, I would agree, yeah.
And when you get into types, what I find is people start to talk about, you know, what's important to them. And so the fun part about Whistler is that you have a bit of an investment side part of it where you can play with nightly rental stuff. And so you get into that, hey, listen, you know, we can offset some of your investment. That part's fun. So there is a conversation that we have where we get people saying, okay, listen, you know what, I want to spend time in Whistler. The question is, okay, what does that look like? Mm-hmm. And how do you build it around someone's portfolio? And also they're not changing their lifestyle too much away from Whistler because, you know, listen, it's beautiful to have a home up there. But if it's the only thing you have and it's the only thing you can do, you can't get up there 24/7. So we have to fit into their lifestyle. So it's just a fun conversation to have versus, say, a typical, you know, city market or urban market.
For sure. We should add for context, the provincial short-term rental restrictions do not apply in Whistler, but there are some zoning restrictions. So some properties are allowed nightly rentals and others aren't.
Correct. It has to have the proper zoning. There's still residential, like pure residential zoning in Whistler that doesn't allow nightly rental, but we have an entrenched nightly rental zoning segment of our market. And it's interesting to sort of see how, you know, the rest of, I wouldn't say the world, has really come down on nightly rental in residential zones. And so there's a lot of people looking for an investment strategy that allows them to continue that because they understand it. And so coming to Whistler, you can have that. And you can also have your lifestyle cabin in Whistler, I'll call it cabin with
air quotes, exactly.
Right? people still call it their cabin. And I love it, but it's a little nicer than a cabin than it used to be. It's not the A-frames that we used to play with.
Indeed.
Yeah.
All right, let's go macro next. So we're recording this episode a day before the Bank of Canada makes its next rate decision. I don't know who booked this podcast for this date.
It was around your calendar, actually.
Oh, my bad.
It worked perfectly because I was away anyway, right?
Any predictions on that front?
Yeah, so I actually just made a video, I think it's going out, but I'm predicting a 50 basis point cut. I think it's pretty much a given they're going to cut, and I'm leaning towards 50 basis points.
Yeah, I was originally thinking that they would wait and they would sort of feel like it would be a 25 and then we'll sort of have that conversation, but I think they're going to go straight to 50. I'm with you.
I agree. So you're both correct. But obviously sitting where we are now, we don't have the benefit of knowing what that decision is going to look like. What we do know is that falling interest rates in Canada relative to those in the States are in part responsible for a weakening Canadian dollar. There's obviously other things as well. Low oil prices, a weak economy, looming Trump tariffs.
And there's more stimulus in the U.S., which could impact capital moving from Canada to the U.S., bringing the exchange rate down.
For sure. And so going back to that sort of weak economy comment as it relates to Canada, the U.S. economy is on a different trajectory right now. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So absolutely, that's a factor. So overall, a weak dollar for Canada isn't a great thing. It makes our exports cheaper for buyers. So that's good. But then everything that we import in US dollars, maybe more specifically that we import from the States, goods and services, it includes your recent holiday to Maui.
Yeah.
All of that becomes more expensive. But then there's Whistler's housing market, and we toyed with some, like, how do we capture what the Whistler housing market is in the landscape of markets in sort of southwestern BC? No short-term rental restrictions, no foreign buyer tax. It's a place where a weaker Canadian dollar actually helps stimulate activity in that market.
And no foreign buyer ban as well.
Yeah, that's a massive part of our market.
So let's talk more about Whistler in that context. And we're likely entering a period now where we're going to see a weakening Canadian dollar over the next number of months. But then we'll probably just see a weak Canadian dollar against the US dollar for a period of likely years. So with that in mind, Rob, what does that mean for the Whistler market going forward? Like, what do you expect from that market in terms of activity and prices?
So one of the things, I'm going to sound a little bit old here, but 25 years ago when I got in the market, it was kind of a similar situation. And we saw a lot of US and foreign investment in Whistler because the exchange rate was favorable. I think right now, if we're talking about it, it's about a 40 to 45% off when you start talking about in US dollar terms. And I think what drives our market is, a bunch of things, but one is people visiting our resort, most important. And there was a guy that I was one of my mentors, and he said, the most important thing in Whistler is to get heads in beds. If we get heads in beds, then we have visitors and then we have people talking about Whistler and they tell their friends and that's an important part. So it's going to, listen, the fact that you can come on a vacation to Whistler for essentially 40% off or 45% off over the next while, it's going to drive more people to Whistler, which is again going to help in the long term for our real estate values, in my humble opinion. That being said, if you start looking at who our buyers are and you compare those, really right now, the foreign, and when I'll call them non-residents, they're not a huge part of our market right now, mm-hmm. but they have been in the past. So I think the highest number of non-resident purchases was 22% back in 2002. And that was when we sold the Four Seasons. Today, I think we're sitting at less than 7%. If I'm not mistaken,
yeah,
for the year.
And if we aggregate the last 6 years, which we have some good data on, it's 88% of buyers are Canadian or local, 7% from the US, and then less than 2% from any other country. So, 12% overall non-resident buyers.
Yeah. And I think that's, I think there's some growth there. Mm-hmm. And then the other side of that is, listen, what drives our market as well is, if you start talking about the nightly rental is, listen, visitors coming, it creates confidence in people in Vancouver and Lower Mainland investing in a property that they know is going to generate good revenue for the next few years as a result of, you know, what I'll call price discounts on a world-class resort, right? So you can either go to Vail and pay X, or you can come to Whistler and pay X minus 40%.
Exactly.
And that's a huge story. And then the fact that there's no foreign buyers ban, and really there's not many places across Canada where we can talk about that. So where does, you know, I can't remember the actual quote, but, you know, money always gets treated best where it's, or sorry, goes where it gets treated best, mm-hmm. right? So where do we want to see investment? Well, where it's treated best. And I think you talk about money moving to the U.S. I think that money potentially could be moving out of Lower, I don't want to say out of Lower Mainland, but definitely there's maybe a decoupling from Vancouver in our market, and maybe have people looking at coming out of the Lower Mainland and investing again in Whistler, because there's some potential growth there.
So investing Whistler as an option, obviously appealing to a lot of people, not everyone can afford it, but there's a huge range of options and prices, right? Do you want to talk a bit about the fractional ownership market? Because that is kind of unique to Whistler.
It is. Yeah. So I really like to focus on people, right? And when it comes down to it, when you sit down with people and say, hey, listen, you know, how do you see yourself in Whistler? You know, how does that property work for you? And a lot of people talk about how busy they are. And, you know, when you have kids and they're in sports or they're doing different things, it's hard to get to Whistler. And so you start having conversations. Okay, well, listen, how much of an investment do you want to put down? You know, what's your down payment? Okay, great. You know, here's the range of properties that could work for you. You know, for instance, if you have $500,000 and you want to get into a, you know, one bedroom, you know, condo, and you try to fit all your family in there, it's not as comfortable when you're there. But if that's what your investment is, and that's what you can afford, and you know, the offsets are going to, from a nightly rental perspective, allow you to be able to fit that into your lifestyle, great, go for it. You know, you can also marry that into a residential property where you say, hey, listen, you know what, you can get into the same, for the same price, and that same price band, you can get into a two bedroom that might be a little bit of an older townhouse condo,
but with no offset.
Correct. And so that's that same thing where your lifestyle changes. And then you get into the quarter ownership where it's, hey, listen, it might be the same or maybe a little bit less of an investment because you can't finance a quarter ownership. But what you end up with is more property and less time. So for instance, rather than being in a one bedroom for, yeah, you get, and quarter ownership set up where it's 1 week out of every four. And then every 4 years, you get 2 weeks at Christmas and New Year's. And you can rent them, you can use them as much as you want. And then you can also, the fun thing is most of the buildings allow the owners, when they're not in house, to come use the amenities. So if you want to go skiing for the day and then come in and then use the parking and then have, you know, mm-hmm. a hot tub and a pool, you can have that. But then you're in a situation where you could get into a three bedroom at the base of the mountain for the same or less down payment, and you're guaranteed 13 weeks a year in mm-hmm. Whistler. And most people look at that in their lifestyle and they realize that's all I can really get anyway. Mm-hmm. And then when you get into the investment side of it, you know, it's followed the market. It's been very similar, and actually probably in the last 4 months has been one of the most active of our market. So it's an interesting, it's not for everybody, mm-hmm. but it's definitely a great solution for the Lower Mainlanders when we get into that.
Yeah. And I wonder if people are aware that that's actually an option there. Right. Yeah. Because I know you talk to people and a lot of people just wave their hand and dismiss Whistler outright as an option for them to put their money into because prices are high.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that does give you access. And for a lot of people, it's going to be the right balance between sort of lifestyle and maybe ROI.
Because it's unusual. You need to understand, you know, all the terms and the ins and outs of like what this means for you. And to your point about, okay, well, 13 weeks, that sounds like more than most people can get away for vacation anyway.
Yeah. And you can guarantee those, you know, again, they're yours to deal with. And then if, you know, listen, even if you can't get up for half of them, you can rent them out. And so there is an offset. It's interesting when you talk about pricing too. A lot of people think about, oh, multi-million dollars, everything is, you know, I actually looked at the numbers this morning and our median sale price this year so far is just over 1.3. When you start comparing that to, I mean, obviously Vancouver is a little bit less than that, but when you start really comparing that across markets, even in BC, it's actually not as high as most people think.
Yeah, I mean, you'll find 1.3 in submarkets throughout Metro Vancouver mm-hmm. as sort of the median or average.
Yeah.
So it's not, that isn't an outlier. Now, obviously there's quite a range around that. You can go as big as you want.
Yep.
And there aren't necessarily a lot of very inexpensive options if you don't go fractional.
Yeah. And, and that, by the way, that's taking out the fractional and timesharing and parking. Okay. So if I did that, it would be even lower. I think it ends up being around more like, 900.
So from the residential zone condo up to the big chalet.
It's so which is great. And when you compare that across the board, and then when we start talking about resort to resort and I'll call it luxury markets, whether you're talking about North America or you could start talking about Europe or you start talking about, different markets across the world, we're actually quite affordable. Right. When you get into some of the benchmark pricing and all that. So it's fun to have the conversation and really start to get rid of the, I guess, the preconceived notions, right? Mm-hmm. Of what Whistler really is. Mm-hmm. And when I sit down and have a conversation with most people after an hour, they really understand that Whistler isn't just the village. It isn't just multimillion dollar homes. It's actually quite accessible to a lot of people. You just have to figure out where you fit in. Mm-hmm. And that's what I love doing. Like that's my, I think if someone asks me where my skill set is, it's digging in and finding out what works for people.
Hi, I'm Cassidy Bast, Director of Advisor Growth and Career Development at Rennie. Do you like what you're hearing? Are you ready to grow your real estate career? At Rennie, we invest in people. With a trusted brand, powerful market intel, and a full-service brokerage, we provide the tools and insights you need to expand and thrive in your business. Visit joinus.rennie.com and let's talk about how Rennie can elevate your business.
So not a lot of new supply in Whistler, but just 45 minutes south along the highway, we're in Squamish, where there is a lot of activity, a lot of one-off new developments happening, and it's been that way for years. But coming soon is a brand new master plan development called Oceanfront. It is on the ocean.
Yep.
The developer is Matthews West. And Rob, you know a lot about that project. You're working on it.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
Squamish Oceanfront. I mean, it's the first time that Squamish is actually going to have access to the ocean from a real estate perspective. And I don't want to say ever, because that's not fair, but in a long, long time. And so it's really exciting. Matthews West is an amazing company. Started out as a Canadian company, ended up in the South, in working out of Dallas. We've met the people there. The culture and the people are fantastic, and they're a great fit with the culture and people of Rennie, right? So it's really exciting to see those two to come together. They've spent so much time and effort and invested, huge amounts of not only funds, but I would say goodwill into the community. And so the fact that that's coming up the pipe and it's finally coming to fruition, I think we're talking about spring at this point. And the Discovery Center's amazing.
It is amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that park is incredible, what they've done there.
Yeah, the park's already built.
Yeah. And that was, I think that's a really important part of, I don't think most developers would have done that first. The amount of infrastructure that put in and spent money on in the Squamish community is really a story in itself, but it's a master plan. And where that differs from what's been going on in Squamish for quite a while is that they have thought about every aspect of the impact to the community, the impact to the land, the impact to the culture. And they're trying to marry it into the experience of what it's going to be. And it's going to take 10 to 15 years to build out. Mm-hmm. And that's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And seeing the plans and talking about how they came up with them is, for me, after being in the business for 25 years, I've done a few projects in the past. It reminds me of the days of InterWest, right? When you're when they were talking about building the village and having, these real true mountain experiences. We're going back to that, and anyway, that's what it feels like to me, and I'm really excited about the building they're putting together there. So
how many homes in total?
So there's in the first building we released, there's 96. The total area for the oceanfront is 80 acres. It's going to be just off of downtown, south of downtown in Squamish. It's going to be a 10 to 15 year build out. My understanding is anywhere from 1,000 to 1,200 doors, some commercial, some residential, office space, mostly residential. Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, seeing the model for the first time blew me away.
So Matthews also has committed to Squamish for at least the next generation. They own additional land that they want to develop, but they're also very connected to the community in other ways.
With the Oceanfront, they spend a lot of time working with First Nations to make sure that they're good stewards of the land and the culture. And all their strategy has been to make sure that they've been consulted all the way through. And when you look at the park, it's a really good example of how they've done that, where, you know, there's right down to the way that they designed it for the kids. They actually consulted with the kids to be able to integrate some of the legends. And it's really fun. So that part is great. The extra land that they've purchased in Brackendale, there was some concern around some safety with it. And so they've actually invested with the provincial and federal government to build a massive debris barrier, which is going to cost them, you know, it's a huge investment in the community. Mm-hmm. And I think that part is, it just shows the difference between this developer and some of the other ones that have been involved. And I'm really excited to work with them.
Yeah, I visited the site a few times over the past few years, from when there was nothing to then there was some servicing and roads, and then to the point where the park that you mentioned had been built, and the presentation center as well. And it's gorgeous views that you can't find anywhere else. Yeah. And I'm just super excited for that to actually get off the ground and start being built, and for people that live there.
Yeah. And the big question is, the brewery open?
Not yet. Okay. We are going to have to wait. I think my understanding is it's sometime late spring 2025.
Okay. That works. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll have you up.
So let's turn now to our next segment, which is Beneath the Headline. And this is where we find a headline that requires a little bit more context. So Rye, over to you.
Okay, so this one, Canadian mortgage rates to rise, housing unaffordable until 2035, according to Oxford Economics. So to be fair, I should start with Oxford Economics usually does really good analysis, but I chuckle at the notion of trying to forecast an event in 2035, so 11 years from now. So this is for all of Canadian real estate. It will, on a national level, be unaffordable for the next 11 years and then switch over to affordable in 2035. And they note that in Vancouver and Toronto, they still expect it to be unaffordable. And the other piece that I would sort of quibble with in this analysis is that they only look at prices, interest rates, and incomes. They don't factor in wealth, which, as we know, prices and incomes have diverged places like Vancouver for a while, and wealth is a big part of that. So overall, it's, I would say, a pretty decent analysis, but I think it's rather tricky to try and predict whether or not something will be affordable or unaffordable 11 years from now.
Yeah, 1 year out is tough enough.
Yeah.
I have trouble figuring out. I can't remember what I was doing 11 years ago. I knew what I was doing 11 hours ago.
It's good. Yeah. To start. Okay, let's move on to our listener question, which is from Tate in Vancouver.
With recent movements in interest rate and ongoing economic uncertainty, is it smarter for homeowners and buyers to lock in into a fixed rate mortgage, or does a variable rate offer better opportunities in today's market? What factors should consumers consider when making this critical decision?
Thanks, Tate. That's a good question. First of all, just full disclosure here, none of us are mortgage brokers, as far as I'm aware.
So the first thing is, Talk to a mortgage broker.
This is not financial advice.
This is, for better or for worse, a lot of people in my social circles that come to me for advice on mortgage rates. I'm not exactly sure why. But the first question I always ask people is, are you risk averse or are you risk loving? If you're risk averse, if you don't like surprises and you want to know what your payments are going to be for the next 1, 3, 5 years, absolutely go fixed, assuming that you can afford it. Now, obviously, no one knows in advance, you know, whether a variable rate is going to be better versus a fixed, and banks essentially price them so they come out even. If you don't mind a little bit of risk, and that involves basically on a daily basis consuming news about the economy and preparing for Bank of Canada rate decisions 10 times a year, which can influence directly
who does that?
I mean, if you're okay with all of that, then a variable rate, generally speaking, could be the way to go for you. Mm-hmm. As we look forward now, I sort of look at the 1 year fixed rates, which are around 6% and much higher than 3 and 5s. 5s around 4%. So you could absolutely lock in for 5 now, know that you're going to pay 4, but know that you probably if there was a way to have waited, you could have gotten a lower rate for longer. So how do you do that? You could do a 1 year at 6% and then lock in a year from now at a 5 year fixed, which might be at 3.5. So if it's at 3.5, you are, you know, over the term of that, you're essentially saving 200 points versus locking in at 4% today. And that 200 points is the difference between the 1 and the 5 year rate today. So I'd say, like, if you think that the 5 year fixed rate is going to sort of level out at 3.5% a year from now and sort of stay in and around there, the 1 to 5 is kind of a, you know, it's a toss up.
I think there's a lot of good points there, and I got a couple things to add. One is, if you go variable, you can lock in, but if you go fixed, you have to pay a penalty break, and it depends on your outstanding balance and how much term you have left. So if, for example, your point about maybe I want to go 5 year fixed a year from now, you can compare then the 1 year and the variable. And there's, again, forecasting 5 years from now is really hard, but forecasting 6 months is slightly less hard. Mm-hmm. So we're in a declining rate environment. I think most people expect declining rates over the next 6 months. Mm-hmm. And so you might feel comfortable comparing that 1 year fixed and that variable. But another thing is, lenders offer different rates to different people, and different lenders may offer you different rates. So I would also say shop around and do the math on all of the offers that you get. So compare let's say you're comparing the 3 year fixed, the 5 year fixed and variable, you can run that math out. So what are the differences after 3 years between 3 year fixed, 5 year fixed, and whatever you think the variable rate might do. And you can actually sort of game out these scenarios and see, okay, well, how did I do with this lender and this offer?
I look at it like, so anecdotally, I always get people to look at the horizon, right? You know, listen, how long do you think you're going to be in this house or this property? You know, if you want to have a little more flexibility, I would say variable is probably the way to go, just because there's less penalties to get out and things like that. Mm-hmm. And then to your point about being able to lock in, most variable products will allow you to lock into a fixed rate at some point in the future. So if you can stomach a little bit of a higher payment to begin with and have the ability to be able to work into a fixed rate when it comes down. I've always been variable, and I've won some of the time and I've lost some of the time, and generally it's probably evened out the most. Mm-hmm. Where I've really benefited the most is the penalties, right? The fixed term penalties versus the variables are big.
It's factor. Hugely different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially with a big mortgage, right? If you're talking, you know, at one point we sold and paid a massive penalty just to be able to sell and buy. But in the end, when we factored it all and it was worth doing, it just was an extra kick in the crotch. Sorry.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, yeah. So now you can, as long as you're buying for more than you're selling, your lender is usually happy to pour your mortgage over for you.
Usually.
Which is another. Yep. Another
one. Whatever the situation is, and if you've done your analysis, don't let the decision between a fixed rate and, you know, a variable rate stop you from making a good decision in real estate. I think that is there's been a bit of brain drain over the last 6-8 months, people trying to time a market. And I think really the more important thing is to move on and make your choice. And you know, as long as you can afford it, of course. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great advice from non-mortgage brokers. Rob, before we wrap up here, how can listeners get in touch with you?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm a phone call away. So cell phone is 604-905-8833. And then I'm at rpalm@rennie.com. I'm also on Instagram and Facebook. Just look for Rob Palm Sea to Sky.
And in a couple months, just pop into Oceanfront Squamish and see Rob there at the presentation center.
Perfect.
We're going to be opening sometime in the spring, and it is fantastic. Come and knock on the door and come check us out.
Yeah, I'll see you in May.
So do we go to the brewery first and then the presentation center?
That's how it's yeah, we're more likely to buy a home.
Yes, I think that's
we'll probably warm. Yeah, we'll warm up somewhere, right? Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks very much, Rob. This was a real pleasure.
Yeah, thanks, Rob.
Thanks, guys. That was fun.
Thank you for tuning into the Rennie Podcast, where we share our passion for homes, housing, community, and cities. We hope that today's episode sparked the same curiosity in you that drives us every day. If you enjoyed the conversation, don't forget to subscribe and follow us on your favorite podcast platform. And if you have a moment, we'd love for you to leave a review. It helps others discover the insights, analysis, and perspective we bring from the Rennie Intelligence Division. For the latest market updates, be sure to register at rennie.com.
Thank you for joining us on the Rennie Podcast. If you'd like to learn more, all resources mentioned in the episode can be found at rennie.com/intelligence. To be the first to receive this information, register for intelligence updates.